This is the LA Local Morning Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back this afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
Oprah said there'd be no Oprah without Phil Donahue. He's passed away. Long Beach clearing encampments, following through on getting more aggressive. First, there are a lot of Southern Californians in Chicago today. A bunch of protesters, too, because it is convention time.
Yeah, the first ever Democratic National Convention with a Californian topping the ticket. Opening tonight in Chicago, Doug Sovereign is there.
Tonight, President Biden will deliver the keynote address at what was supposed to be his nominating convention. Instead, it'll open with Mr. Biden endorsing his vice president as his successor. It's sure to be a poignant moment for the lame duck committee. Commander-in-Chief. California State Controller and Convention Delegate Malia Cohen, longtime friend and protege of Kamala Harris, says this week is the Vice President's chance to win over the voters who still don't know that much about her. That's about a third of the electorate, according to the latest polls.
People will be attracted, even if it is just out of sheer curiosity, they will be attracted to her. And then once you're attracted to Kamala, or I should say the vice president, she can keep you there.
Vice President Harris will give her acceptance speech Thursday. Also on the speaker's list for opening night, First Lady Jill Biden and former First Lady, Senator, Secretary of State, and presidential nominee Hillary Clinton.
And L.A. Mayor Karen Bass is going to be talking tonight, too. Prominent speaking role. Craig Figner says expect her to talk up the years of experience working along with the VP.
Politically speaking, this is huge for Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass. She'll be given this evening speaking position tonight at night one of the Democratic National Convention from Chicago, and it's not known right now exactly what she's going to talk about. I don't have an advancer on the script, but, you know, you look at her resume, and, you know, she and the Vice President, Kamala Harris, they go way back to when Mayor Bass was the Speaker of the California State Assembly. And then also keep in mind, after the mayor was elected to be the mayor of Los Angeles, well, it was Vice President Kamala Harris who got on Air Force Two and flew to Los Angeles to swear Mayor Bass into office. At L.A. City Hall, I'm Craig Figner, KNX News, 97.1 FM.
Well, they were out there yesterday in Chicago, even more expected today. Crowds of activists gathering for protests outside the Democratic National Convention. Former Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson says the officers have to handle the demonstrations carefully.
A crowd like this, you don't want to come in as the police and agitate them and show them a hard look right off the bat, because what you're signaling to them is that you're ready for a fight.
The protesters are hoping to call attention to such issues as economic injustice and reproductive rights, but most of them agree an immediate ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war is the overarching message here. Organizers estimate turnout today to be at least 20,000.
Former President Trump with a busy schedule this week, trying to get some of that spotlight. Going to talk about the economy and energy during an appearance today in Pennsylvania. That's noon our time. CBS political correspondent Caitlin Huey Burns says Republican candidate has several other stops on his agenda next few days.
Trump is planning a battleground state blitz, speaking about crime in Michigan, national security in North Carolina, and immigration in Arizona. He'll also go out to Nevada to tout his no tax on tips policy.
And there will be a border trip when he's in Arizona.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Israel today, meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other top Israeli officials, said this about the importance of the ceasefire for hostage talks.
This is a decisive moment, probably the best, maybe the last opportunity to get the hostages home, to get a ceasefire, and to put everyone on a better path to enduring peace and security.
The meeting comes after Hamas rejected the terms for a hostage release ceasefire deal that was discussed last week. The Biden administration trying to secure an agreement on the first phase of a three-phase plan by the end of this week. The plan put forward by President Biden back in May.
One of the biggest names in daytime TV has died. TV talk show host Phil Donahue dying last night after a long illness. Family says he was surrounded by relatives. His wife of 44 years, actress Marlo Thomas, started the show in 1967 in Ohio, expanded nationally, became known for tackling controversial topics. First national talk show to talk about AIDS, Catholic priest sex abuse, known for celebrity interviews, too. 20 Emmy Awards. Show was top rated till Oprah came on the scene in the 80s. Ran for 29 years, ended in 1993. Phil Donahue was 88 years old. 20 minutes of nonstop news presented by theloanexchange.com for all your home loan needs.
President Biden set to give a speech later today at the Democratic National Convention, the keynote speech there in Chicago. He's expected to pass that torch to Vice President Kamala Harris. We talked to Georgetown professor and former Biden speech writer Sean O'Brien about what we can expect to hear from President Biden.
But I'm curious, is this the type of thing that you'd want to write, even though it's tough for the guy delivering it, maybe the writer too, it's emotional, and you got to make this exit, but you got to do it on a high note, but you got to pass the torch. I mean, complicated doesn't even start to cut it, does it?
Complicated is definitely right, but it's also a huge opportunity. And, you know, just selfishly from a speechwriting perspective, this is great because you have so much to work with and not that much that you actually have to specifically get done. You're not trying to sell policy. You're not trying to wade through any type of really complicated waters. What you're really looking to do is put a solid stamp on the legacy, and you're coming in. He's going to get a standing ovation that's probably going to last a minute, right? It's going to be a huge run-in. And this is an opportunity to write, you know, Ronald Reagan coming out and telling George Bush, win just one more for the Gipper, right? There's a lot of speech writing fireworks that you can jump into here.
What do you think he starts to go through, and how do you think it looks? Because I don't have to tell you this, but Joe Biden has been frustrated, and it's been an ongoing thing, feeling that he hasn't gotten credit for the things he's done.
Sure. Sure. But I think that type of stuff comes out in more in private conversations and, you know, maybe in unscripted back and forth. When he's up there and he is in his element just delivering, he's got what Teddy Roosevelt called the bully pulpit. Nobody gets to interrupt him. He gets to say whatever he wants. Then he is going to be a lot more free and open. And I think that kind of more positive side is really what's going to be on display now. I think he's had plenty of time to kind of work through this thing. As you said, he's speaking on Monday, not Thursday. But that takes so much of the pressure off. And now he still gets a chance to brag on everything that he's done. He's just going to be doing it instead of saying I and me. He's going to be saying a lot of we and our as he's like bumping up the vice president's, you know, accomplishments along those lines as well.
Yeah. Where's the sliding scale on how much is just his goodbye? Let me tie a bow on everything versus how much do I talk about her going forward and how we did everything? Because isn't that an easy attack line for the Republicans? If you tie her too much to Joe Biden, you say, well, if you don't like this guy, look, she was lockstep with him all the whole way.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And that's something that every vice president has ever dealt with in terms of running along with the president. And, you know, some have done it just better than others. Typically, the best course for the president in this case, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Ronald Reagan, whether it's, you know, even Dwight Eisenhower, is going ahead and asserting strongly what happened within their administration and let the VP pull their own separate line, however they're going to do it. Remember, what we're talking about is kicking off a convention this week. And so wherever Vice President Harris takes it later on in the week, wherever, you know, the Tim Walz and all of the other down ballot candidates who are also going to get a chance to talk, they will all have their own thread to move. But Joe Biden is up there to talk about the Biden presidency and also to try to add as much fuel to the potential Harris presidency as he can.
Does he sort of fade into the background after this, unless she needs him on some rally in Scranton or something? I think he's got even a vacation planned for the next couple of days after this speech. Is this kind of the thing he does, and then we see him again at the inauguration?
Well, I think definitely for the next week, he's going to be out of the picture. He'll watch the rest of the convention, you know, as you said, maybe out in Delaware. But the how they use him on the campaign trail will be interesting. He's still a very effective tool in terms of, you know, meeting with people and relating and driving interest. But it's also a hell of a thing to move a president around. You can just, you know, aside from, you know, his performance in general, it's very difficult and very costly to have a president attend rallies.
That is Georgetown professor and former Biden speechwriter Sean O'Brien.
Put down that cell phone, even at work. 7-Eleven, Circle K, merger, convenience store empire, and we'll look ahead to Labor Day travel as 20 minutes of nonstop news continues right here on KNX News.
Long Beach officials, they are moving ahead with their aggressive plan, clearing out homeless camps in the city. The action, based on that recent Supreme Court decision that allows cities and counties to remove the camps, our John Barrett is live at Gumbiner Park, one of the targets today.
Well, they have not started cleaning up anything yet, although a homeless man got up early and moved a lot of his stuff, including a couple of bicycles, out of here early. He said he did not want to get a ticket, but I did talk to City Council Member Daryl Supernaw about this big effort.
Yeah, the plan is to notice the encampments, that is, put a notice up that can be seen by the public, and then begin the cleanup at the assigned time that appears on the notice.
And so he also told me that the homeless people can't just move out of the park and put all their stuff on the sidewalk. It's not going to work that way.
Well, at a certain point, the items do have to be removed. They've, you know, exceeded the deadline.
Now, as a matter of fact, I found the notice. They have to post a notice 72 hours in advance. It's a bright green piece of paper that someone dropped on the ground here. It said it was posted on the 17th, and it gave the dates of the 19th and the 20th. That's today and tomorrow. So maybe officially they have to give 72 hours notice, so maybe they can't actually clean up the park before tomorrow. But Long Beach is going to do it. They're going to start with five parks, five areas they consider the most dangerous.
All right, John, thanks. Former girlfriend and assistant to the mayor of Inglewood, James Butts, demanding up to $65 million to settle a lawsuit. She accuses the city of failing to stop the mayor from sexually harassing and retaliating against her after she ended their nearly decade-long affair. Melanie McDade Dickens calculates the damages at more than $65 million, but says she's willing to accept the maximum amount that's allowed by the city's insurance policies. They say that's $35 million to drop the case. The case is set to go to trial October 28th. There's a hearing on Friday where the judge can decide whether or not to throw it out.
AAA expects the summer's record-breaking travel to finish pretty strong over Labor Day weekend. CBS News senior transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve with more on the predictions.
When it comes to the best and worst times to drive, AAA says for people departing, Thursday, August 29th, the best time is before 11 a.m. Friday, August 30th, leave before noon or after 7 p.m. On Saturday, the 31st, after noon. Worst times to drive to start that holiday stretch, Thursday between 1 and 7:30 p.m., Friday during traditional rush hour, that 2 to 6 p.m. window, and even Saturday morning.
Seattle tops the nation's top Labor Day weekend destination, followed by Orlando and Anchorage, while Vancouver is the top international destination.
People using the cell phones all the time. But Ian Crawford says you might not want to be on that thing too much at work.
Danielle Abril covers tech and its impact on the workplace for the Washington Post. And she says experts she's spoken with say the appearance can have a negative effect on your job, even your career. How do you get around it?
You can start by tracking your usage, understanding sort of how much you're using your phone and how others perceive your use of your phone. And then there's a bunch of steps you can take to sort of curb that use if you do find you're using it too much.
And if you are using it too much, you may need a complete detox. Maybe not using your phone on the job for a period of time to reset your usage.
He says, hey, just read the room. Some workplaces more accepting than others.
Well, 7-Eleven could be changing hands soon. Its parent company has received a buyout offer from the Canadian firm that owns a Circle K chain of convenience stores. A merger certainly could face opposition from regulators concerned about competition. 7-Eleven owns more than 13,000 stores in the U.S. and Canada. Circle K has more than 9,000. 7-Eleven shareholders seeming enthusiastic. The company's stock rose by more than 20% on the news.
Survey looked at inflation's influence on sending the kids back to school.
When it comes to shopping for back-to-school items, a Bankrate survey finds inflation is impacting buying habits, but not as much as it was a couple of years ago.
About a third of back-to-school shoppers, 32%, say that inflation is changing the way they buy. A couple of years ago, that was 41%.
Bankrate senior analyst Ted Rossman says in other areas, inflation is having a greater impact.
But back-to-school is one area where people seem to be feeling a lot better.
Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
Well, today is the day. Former Congressman George Santos expected to plead guilty to several felonies. The New York Republican was expelled from the House back in December after a majority of Republicans and Democrats voted to oust him. We talked to CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarlane, who's outside the courthouse on Long Island.
Since this has been a long couple of years, quick refresher course for us on what they have him on, you know, here in this case and what this deal could look like.
Oh, boy. So much, Mike. It's 24 federal counts, conspiracy, fraud. They accuse him of money laundering, of fleecing his own donors, stealing their identities to rack up credit card charges, of using campaign donations for luxury purchases for himself, talking about Botox, spa treatments, designer clothes. That's on top of all the other stuff, you know, the personal fabrication of his biography and his resume. That wasn't criminal, but that got him bumped out of Congress. He has been defiant, as you said, ever since he started in Congress. But around the 3 p.m. Eastern time hour, noon locally, he's expected to enter a guilty plea to at least some of these charges.
So Santos, I mean, he previously maintained his innocence. He pleaded not guilty to the charges. Why the change?
Well, he has maintained his innocence throughout. Even before the criminal charges were filed, he said he was being wrongly scrutinized for his personal story. He says he's been wrongly prosecuted. I don't want to speak for why there'd be a change of plea hearing today beyond the fact that trial was set to begin in just a few weeks. The, you know, the runway was growing short here for him. And two of his former campaign aides had not only pleaded guilty, they cooperated with the federal investigation against him. This is a pretty stiff deck of cards he's facing.
Is this just an avoid jail time kind of thing? Because had he gone before a jury, they might have just looked at him and said, look, buddy, we don't like you at all.
That really is the question of the day, Mike. I mean, I don't know if he's avoiding jail or minimizing jail. And it's hard to say before we know to which charges he'd be pleading. These are federal felonies. I don't know which way it's headed, but we may get a sense during the hearing today what an estimated guideline sentencing range could be and whether prison could be taken off the table.
The fascination from public to George Santos, when you look back at this, is it politicians doing bad stuff? Is it the clothes, the spa treatments, the OnlyFans account, like you mentioned? Or is it also like the lack of shame? Because this is also the guy who showed up at the State of the Union after they tossed him because he still had floor privileges.
I think that's what it was. I think it was the provocative way he carried himself in the face of all this pressure. You know, Congress didn't want to have to expel him. His detractors wanted him to just quit. And they applied all this pressure to him, shunning him, shaming him, but he wouldn't. He had such a high pain threshold, he stuck around and they had to expel him. He's just different. We'll see if that manifests itself at the hearing today. I'm at the courthouse in Central Islip, New York.
That is CBS congressional correspondent Scott McFarland.